Our study that we've been going through the past few weeks on how believers profit from the doctrine of God's sovereignty. Last week, we looked at Daniel chapter 4 and the confession of Nebuchadnezzar. And we found out something that I've always believed, that a real belief in the sovereignty of God is foundational. You have to recognize that God is the Almighty, that He is in control, that He always executes His purpose just exactly how He laid it out. And we saw all of that in Daniel's confession and his words of praise to the Almighty. Tonight, we're also going to look at the fact that if you really believe in the sovereignty of God, if you believe that God is in control of everything, that He is working all things after the counsel of His own will, that His purpose is eternal, and that it is always being worked out without fail. And if you believe all of that, and you also understand what you are, you're not God. You're fallen. You're broken. You're sinful. All of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And if you come to understand really what you are, a sinner, and with all that that entails, we were blinded by Satan. Before the Lord saved us, we couldn't see things clearly. We thought that we could see things from our own perspective, but we didn't see things from God's perspective. And we had no spiritual understanding, no discernment about our need for Jesus Christ, because not only were we blinded, but the Bible compared us to being dead in trespasses and in sins. Meaning that, spiritually speaking, we were lifeless. And it's so true. If you've ever talked to people about the Lord and witnessed to people, you'll find out real quick that people are dead in their sins. Because, and this struck me, and I'll never forget it, the very first day that I was saved. I will never forget this as long as I live. I drove home, and then I ran up the steps to talk to my mom and dad. It was on a Sunday afternoon, and I told them that I'd been saved by the grace of God, and that it was through Jesus Christ and not through anything else, that I believe that He died for my sins, that He was buried and that He rose again. And I literally knew nothing else. I was a heathen. Before Greg Rittenhouse started witnessing to me, I'd gone to church a little bit, but none of it ever made any sense to me. I never gave it any thought about eternal things until God began to deal with me. And so up to that point, I was 21 years old when the Lord saved my soul. And I remember this. I told my mom and dad, I said, I've got to go down and talk to Kevin Hamilton. Kevin Hamilton was a black guy that I grew up with, one of my very best friends. We had gone to school together, played ball together. We just grew up together. And I remember going to his house, and Miss Hamilton opened the door. Now, she was remarried. I never did. I've always called her Miss Hamilton. And she said, Tommy, what are you doing here? I said, Miss Hamilton, I've been saved by the grace of God. Today, Jesus Christ saved my soul, and I came here to tell Kevin how to be saved. And she said, you get right in here, son. Now, Kevin was, he was wicked, like I was. And it was in the afternoon. He was still in the bed, hung over from the partying from the night before. I wasn't with him the night before. So I rustled him up and he said, Tommy, what are you doing here? I said, Kevin, that the greatest thing happened to me, man. I am saved. I trusted Jesus. I believe on Him. My sins are forgiven. Kevin, it's like I've hit an eternal lottery. I didn't know any other way to put it. You know, I've hit the jackpot, brother. I'm saved. He looked at me and he said, you're crazy, man. He said, this, Ross, it's just some phase you're going through. I said, are you crazy, Kevin? Here I am telling you about the greatest thing that could ever happen to somebody. To be saved. To know that your sins are forgiven. That you're going to heaven and you don't want it? He said, no. I said, you're an idiot, man. Now, again, I didn't have a lot of tact. And he was my best, one of my best friends. And he said, yeah, I'll give you 6 months. He said, I'll give you 6 months. You'll be back doing everything with all the rest of us in 6 months. Man, you talk about your balloon being busted. And it was like Kevin punched me in the gut with all of his force. And I said, well, I said, I'm going to be praying for you. I said, can I pray for you right now? And I didn't even know how to pray. I mean, I literally didn't know how to pray. I just bowed my head and I said, God, open this man's eyes. And I pray that you'll save him by your grace. Amen. That's it. I got up. I left. I kept witnessing to Kevin. But that day it struck me, the very first day that I was saved, I was beginning to see, I was beginning to understand something about sin and salvation. He was deep in sin. But he did not see his need of Jesus Christ. And then I'll never forget, they were having a big party. I'd been saved about maybe 6 months. Maybe it was only 3 months. I don't know. And I'm driving in my car. And they had called me and said, hey, Ross, you know, this band that is... They're moving. They'd all lived together in a house. And they said, you ought to come to the party, man. It's going to be a huge blowout. Everybody's going to be there. I said, no, man, I've been saved. I'm not coming to no drinking, smoking, party, all the wickedness that goes on. I'm not going to do it. And I'm driving along in my car, and I was praying and thinking. And it just hit me. How is it that I'm saved? How is it, God, that somebody is probably more wicked than any of those people that are going to be at this party? How is it that I can be saved? And they don't see it. Man, tears just started streaming down my face. I realized it was because God intervened. God opened my eyes. to see my need of Christ. And that's when I began to... Now, I had, by this time, I'd been in church for 3 months. I had heard Brother Farrell preached on the doctrines of grace. He taught the sovereignty of God. So, but I didn't understand it. And I was just a baby Christian. But that day, it started becoming real. Well, after I got done with my little bit of a crying jag here, I said, Lord, I'm going to that party. And I went to that party. By this time, I had a really short haircut. I remember when I got my first haircut after I'd been saved, I went into the barber and he said, how you want it cut? I said, I want you to cut it short. He said, are you serious? You've never asked for that before. You like long hair. I said, I'm saved. I want my hair cut short so everybody knows whose side I'm on. Now, this was in 1980, all right? And so he cut my hair. And I went there, I had my short hair. I had a pocket full of tracks. And I had my Jesus First pin on. All right? There must have been 200 people at that party. I would go to a group. Hey, Ross, how you doing? And there'd be five or six people. And I'd start talking. I'm doing great, man. In fact, I want to tell you how great I'm doing. I've been saved. God showed me what a wicked sinner I was and how much I needed Jesus. And He saved my soul. And I'm telling you that you can be saved. And, you know, I mean, everybody's they got beer in their hands and all other kinds of stuff. Ross, what are you doing here? I said, I came. I needed to tell you. Well, I handed out the tracts. And they kind of eased off, you know, like kind of got away from me. So I went to the next group, and the next group, and the next group. And I just kept passing out tracts, telling people about the Lord. And then I just left. Now, the sovereignty of God. That's how I came to understand it. When God showed me that He intervened in a sovereign, powerful way that was unexplainable. Because I was more wicked than these people. I deserved hell a lot more than most of my friends. But God chose me. God worked in my heart. He opened my eyes. He showed me what I needed. And I forgot to tell you that day, the day that I was saved, when Kevin Hamilton said, you'll be back with us in 6 months. I can remember going back to my car. I was so mad at Kevin. Because I thought for sure, man, day one, this guy's going to be saved. So I was mad about that. And then I was mad that he said, this is just a phase. I remember saying to God, I said, God, I don't ever want to go back to the way that I was. I want to live for You. I want to serve You. I said, Lord, I don't know anything about the Bible, but I know that You saved me, and I want to, don't ever let me go back. That's that burned in my heart. And I'm thankful to God that this November of 2023, if I live that long, it'll be 43 years since the Lord saved me. Why did God save me? Was it because I was smarter? Well, you know the answer to that, don't you? You've known me for years, and you know I ain't real smart. I wasn't smarter. It wasn't like I had some special enlightenment from within that they didn't. It was God. It was God. The power of God sovereignly intervened, called me out of darkness into His marvelous light. It was a dramatic change. A radical change. It's one that lasts forever. When you've been born of God and you've trusted Jesus Christ, your life changes forever. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. God changed my life so dramatically. I've told you about I'd go up and preach to my gramps and grandma. I didn't know, again, I was just learning things. And they had a chair, and I would make it like a pulpit, and I'd put my Bible there, and I'd start witnessing, just preaching to them. And my gramps, one day he said, "I want to know, how in the world have you changed like this, Tommy?" He said, "I know what you were. What do you call it? Have you turned over a new leaf? What I don't understand." I said, "Gramps, I've been saved. Jesus Christ changed my life forever. And I want to give everything I got to Him and serve Him." They couldn't comprehend it at the time. I remember after I'd been saved for a while, my mother, she came up to me and she said, "I want to know one thing. Are you say that you're saved. Are you giving money to that church?" And I said, "Well, Mom," by this time I'd learned a little bit of the Bible, and I understood you ain't supposed to tell people what you give and all of that. And I said, "I think there's a Bible verse that says you're not supposed to tell what you left hand or right hand." I got it all misapplied, but I said, "Yes, I am given to the Lord's church." She said, "Wow, something really has happened to you, son," because she knew how tight I was with my money. What was happening to me? I'd been saved out of a life of darkness, depravity, ungodliness, and sin. Didn't know much, but I knew that Jesus Christ had died in my place for me personally, and that He shed His blood for me, and that He, through faith in Him, all my sins were forgiven. I'm going to tell you something. It brought such great joy to my heart. Now, I've told you many times, when the Lord saved me, I didn't hear a voice from heaven. There was no lightning strike. I didn't see any physical things happening. Some people say that all of a sudden the grass was greener and the trees were brighter. None of that was true. I had been so exercised over my sins. And there were days that I thought I was going to drop right into hell. And I was so joyful that the Lord saved me. I came to the realization that it was all of God. Every bit of it. That it wasn't my will. I'd never even heard the teaching of free will. I realized it wasn't of me. It wasn't anything I had done. I realized that I had nothing to offer God. What's He going to take from a broken drunkard? What's He going to take from somebody like me? I had nothing. Nothing.
And I realized it was all of God. It was all God in the salvation of my soul. And I began to realize
that the only way people can be saved is by sovereign grace. It has to originate with God. It has to be carried out by God. It has to be sustained by the power of God. Now, I didn't understand any of that, but I experienced it when I was saved. And when you get a hold of that, and this happened to me, I didn't have to unlearn a lot of things. You know, a lot of people are, they're brought up in a religion and they're taught a lot of stuff that's, some may be true, but a lot of it may be false. And they don't understand salvation by grace. They don't understand a lot of simple Bible doctrines that you at Mount Pleasant take for granted. Because you've heard them for years. But I didn't have to unlearn anything. And what happened was, I saw that salvation from beginning to end is all by the sovereign power of God. You see, a belief in God's sovereignty exposes the falsehood and the heresy of salvation by works or by human effort. See, when God saved me, I realized it had nothing to do with me. It wasn't anything good that I had done. He didn't save me because I had done something good. Because I was bad. I was evil. I was hateful. I was miserable. I had nothing. And the first verse that I really latched on to, "For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast." I understood that God had saved me by His grace, and that it was all His doing. It had nothing to do with the waters of baptism, had nothing to do with the Baptist church that I was a member of. It was all the sovereign grace of God. When you get a hold of that, you immediately see, and from then on, I don't know anybody that's come to see the truth about the grace of God that's ever gone back to free willism and Arminianism and work salvation and salvation by ordinances. Once you see that it's not by human effort or good works, but it's all by Christ, you understand somewhat of the sovereignty of God. A.W. Pink said this, and he was commenting on Romans 9:16, which I'll read right now. When you believe in the sovereignty of God, you can't believe in salvation by works or by free will. You have to believe that it's all of God. And Romans 9:16 says, "So then, it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy." I mean, that really sets it forth, doesn't it? It's not by the power of your will. I don't believe man's will is free in the sense that most people talk about anyway. It's in bondage. Man's a free agent. The problem is, he always chooses to rebel against God unless God changes his willer. That's what he did to me. And he does that to people who are highly religious too. He did it to Saul of Tarsus, later known as Paul. One of my favorite passages, Acts chapter 9. This guy's will was to kill Christians, to hunt them down, imprison them, and to do away with this new movement, Christianity. That was his will. That was what his desire was. And he's on the road to Damascus, and the Lord revealed himself unto him, knocked him down. And he said, this is a guy that was hunting down Christians. He said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? God had changed his will by his power. That's the sovereignty of God. We're going to close with this quote from A.W. Pink. To declare that God helps those who help themselves is to repudiate one of the most precious truths taught in the Bible and in the Bible alone. Namely, that God helps those who are unable to help themselves, who have tried again and again only to fail. To say the sinner's salvation turns upon the action of his own will is another form of the God-dishonoring dogma of salvation by human efforts. You understand the sovereignty of God. You understand you're not saved by what you do. You're saved by what Jesus Christ did for you in his death, his burial, his resurrection, the gospel. I don't know how I only got one point tonight, but that's the way it goes. Sometimes it goes that way.